Welcome to The Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. My name is Lucy Ritter. This podcast is about child development and education and how we as adults can support children in learning and growth. So today I'm really excited for this. I have Lauren Barrick here, and she is an early interventionist. And this is really exciting because this is probably a gap in Spencer and I's knowledge. We have an episode that is coming out. When this comes out, it will be like a month ago. But that kind of starts introducing some of these topics and gives us a little bit of a background on working with children who are neurodivergent or have special needs. So I'm really excited to have you here. I met Lauren at school. We went to BYU Idaho together, and we're in a couple of classes together. Child lit, I think, maybe. I don't remember. But she's really awesome, and I'm really excited. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, your family.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I am excited to be on. So I have a 2-year-old little girl who is super spunky and fun and outgoing. And we live in Louisiana. I have my bachelor's degree in early childhood special education. And I went into this field having no idea what I was getting myself into. It sounded like a good idea to be able to have a special education background and be able to teach K through third as well. And so that's how I got into it. But then I stayed for a totally different reason. I found my passion working for children with children 0 to 3 that do have disabilities. I love this age because I get to work with families, because children primarily are usually with their primary caregiver instead of going to the school setting at this age. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and how I got into IQ.
I love that. So I told my husband that I was going to record with you today, and he was like, I don't know what any of that means. So, and I think that's the reaction of most people. So talk to me a little bit about, like, what is early intervention? Why is it important? What is your role as an early interventionalist? Interventionist.
Yes. My friends don't even know what I do half the time. They're like, wait, what do you do again? So the reason for that not a lot of people know what it is because it's a pretty new field. So Early Steps, that's the program in Louisiana that I work for, started in 2009. So it's relatively new. So anyway, early intervention means to intervene. So we are intervening with a child to help them practice a skill that they are struggling with. So some examples are turn-taking, sharing, following directions, eating, walking, crawling, imitating sounds. Those are all things that you think, oh, all children need to learn these things, which is correct. All children do need to learn these things. And that is the importance of early intervention, is when a child is behind typical developing peers. So just because a child receives early intervention services doesn't mean that they have a disability. It just means that they are progressing a little bit slower than a typical developing child.
That's really interesting. I like that distinction, that it's not just children who have special needs, but it's just anyone who needs a little additional help. I like that a lot.
An example of this is a student that I have that I could tell you kind of his story that I currently see. So the first 2 years of life, he didn't have any hearing. And later we found out that this is because his tonsils were blocking his hearing. So once his tonsils were removed, he was able to hear again. And so once he was able to hear, he missed 2 years of development. He missed all of those sounds and being able to learn how to babble. And I mean, you miss so much when you can't hear for the first 2 years of your life. Social development and even self-help skills he was extremely behind on just because he couldn't hear. So once those tonsils were removed, even before he was healed from the surgery, he started all of this babbling. And mom is just like crying, like, oh my goodness, like what happened? Because they didn't even know that he couldn't hear. They were thinking that he had autism spectrum disorder. And within the first month, he learned 100 words. And now he can tell you everything he wants to say and then some. So that is a great example of early intervention and how that it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a disability at all. There might be a health problem or just a change of pace. You know, some children, everybody learns at a different speed and we all have strengths and weaknesses. Some of us are really good at one thing and not so good at another. And we need someone to come in. And what I do is I go in and I give them lots and lots and lots of practice in that skill. So an example of this. So Lucy, how about your son? What is maybe some of his strengths and then maybe something that he struggles with developmentally?
His verbalization, I feel like, is pretty on. Like for a two-year-old, he has a pretty large vocabulary and can speak pretty clearly. Well, this is the first thing that popped into my head, and I don't know if it quite counts as he's very small for his age. Like he's just really little. and so it doesn't really hinder, I don't think, a lot of his motor development, but yeah, he's just really small. So
yeah, that's great. So then you can give lots of practice, you know, in motor development, even though he's, you know, really small, he might need some practice. And that's what I would do as an early intervention.
Okay. Something that we have been, that I didn't even think of, but because he had a lot of mouth ties when he was born, and he still does. And so that is something that we've really like been watching a lot and tried to work with him a lot and tried to do like exercises with him because we've been very concerned of his tongue getting in the way of sounds and it hasn't come up a ton, but he is kind of a picky eater. And I think it's probably due to that, which is, I'd imagine you work with a lot of children who have that. My sister-in-law is a speech language pathologist, and that's something that she often has connections with, children who struggle with that.
The speech language pathologists usually handle that. So I work on a team of providers. So I'm considered a generalist. So I specialize in all domains of development. The speech therapist specializes in speech. The OT specializes in sensory, small muscle, PT, large. And so I support the other providers is how that works. So usually they have an early interventionist, or in Louisiana, it's called a special instructor. Some states it's called a special instructor, come in when children are just not quite there. They're not quite getting it with other providers. Special instructor then comes in to kind of tie it all together, all the development together, because we are skilled at using an activity that impacts all domains of development.
Interesting.
So that's kind of different there. And we'll have to talk about that a little later too. I'm dealing with that with my daughter, tongue ties as well, and she's going to see a speech therapist. And so, yeah, during her early intervention sessions, I have to sit on my hands. It's one of the hardest things for me to sit there as a parent and not a provider. It's so hard.
I could see that. Yeah. Well, so that's interesting. So they generally only bring you in if they're not already having success?
Yeah, usually. Yep. Usually we're the last kind of resource towards the end. So they're about to turn three usually. I have one that's a one-year-old, and mom pushed for it. She knows the importance in having an early interventionist. She has some background in child development herself, and so she pushed for it, and so we were able to have it. An early interventionist is a very new field, like I said, and there's not a whole lot of us out there. It's very hard to fill jobs. It's great for me because I can find a job anywhere, but yeah. School districts and early intervention programs have a really hard time filling jobs because there's just not a lot out there. So if you are interested in what I'm talking about, send me a message on Instagram. I'd be happy to tell you a little bit more.
That's fascinating. So you were talking how mostly it's earlier children. What is the benefit of working with children who are younger versus waiting until they are school age. I feel like a lot of parents, that seems maybe not even easier, but it just kind of seems like what you should do, because that's when you might feel like you have more resources available. Why is it important to start working with the children who are younger?
So I hear this all the time. I'm just going to wait until they're in kindergarten. So I'm so glad you asked me this question. So I'll start with a statistic for you. So for every dollar we put in early childhood for early intervention, we get 100 back is what they say. It's tenfold. So for example, the little boy that I shared the story about his tonsils impeding his speech, imagine if they didn't hear that until they didn't find that out until kindergarten. They found that out because of early intervention. He would have missed in 5 years. And how are you going to learn how to read and write and all of the things that we expect in kindergarten if you do not have that foundation, those foundational skills in early childhood? And so if we're missing the developmental milestones in early childhood, it's a bigger gap to fill in kindergarten. So we don't want to create that gap so big, but right when they're getting into school, we want to get on top of it right when we're starting to see an issue, and so that we can help aid them in their development. And I just want to paint a picture for you, if you don't mind, of an early intervention session, because I had a dad just today look at what I was doing and say, "What are you doing, Miss Lauren? It looks like you're just playing." And yes, it looks like from the eye. When I come in, I often ask the parents how the child is doing, what progress they're seeing on their goals. And then I sit down with the child, I pull out puzzles and blocks, and I play with their toys that they have in the home. And it seriously looks like just playing. An intervention I did today was we were putting cars down the ramp. And that's when the dad said, "Miss Lord, you're just playing." But what he didn't realize was the goal that I was working on was following directions. And so I was instructing the child to put it up, put it down, let it go, pick up, go get it. I was seeing so many directions. Within a 5-minute span, I was giving 10, 15 directions. And that's the beauty of early intervention, is that it's practice over and over and over and over again so that they can gain those skills.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, that my sister-in-law always knows the coolest new games for children, because that's what she uses all the time. And I'd imagine that, and maybe this is showing a gap in my knowledge, but that it's easier to keep those sessions feeling more fun and like play the younger that they are, because that is what children that age are doing. Like, primarily, that's how they're learning everything, is through play. So it can be a lot more fun, a lot more productive, because it doesn't feel like they're being fixed or, you know, being worked on. They're just playing with another person.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the kids love when I walk through the door. Like, I bring a bag full of toys with me to kind of change it up from their own toys that they have at home. And immediately they go to my bag and start digging through, "What did I bring today?" And yes. It is fun, because play is the best way to learn. We know that. There's research backing that.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some things that parents and teachers should be looking for then? Like, we know this is important, so we need to start paying attention earlier, not just waiting for somebody else to tell us. Like, what should we be looking for?
This is a hard one. So I'm going to try to go into it not too technical. So Lucy, help me out. If I say something that is technical, that you don't know what it means, call me out on it. So I'm going to try my best to explain it so that you don't have to have any background. So in child development, we have domains of development. So the first one is social. So how children interact with peers and with others, adults, self-help skills. So feeding themselves, dressing, and then motor skills. We have the small motor muscles. So hand muscles, mouth muscles, and then our large motor muscles. So being able to climb, walk, crawl, And then the next domain of development is communication. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And for each age, there is developmental standards, developmental milestones. That's the right word. Developmental milestones for each age, what a child should be doing by that age. And I found the best website ever when I was preparing for this today. And I actually showed a parent it today. And she was like, holy cow, I love this. So let me get it. So it is pathways.org, pathways.org. And when you go to it, you can click your child's age. And so once you click your child's age, you will see on the left side of the screen everything that your child should be working on at that age range. So if your child is not doing these yet, that is okay within this age range. And then on the right side of the screen, if they are not doing these yet, this is when we should be concerned. And we should be reaching out to a professional to help. And so that is the best way for me to explain it to you, is to send you to that website, because they did a beautiful job with that. And I love on here, they have games that you can do with your child that helps aid development. And these games are multi, it covers a lot of the domains of development, which I love. As an early interventionist, I love being able to include multiple domains of development at one time. They also have videos to help parents and show them how to do an early intervention setting, which I love, and the important milestones at that age. And so I just think this is a wonderful resource to help parents know when to get help.
That is so cool. I'm looking through it right now.
Yeah, I am so glad you asked that question, because it helped me find it. And it is an awesome, awesome one. And the parent I showed it today was like, holy cow, I didn't know this was there. And that's awesome.
Yeah, because this is, you know, like even as someone who studied child development, like I don't have those just like off the top of my head. So to have those all laid out. Obviously, I put in Leo.
Yeah.
And that is so cool.
And when I was looking at it, I was like, oh, we need to work on this more, you know, with my own child. It reminds you what you need to work on.
Yeah.
And so once you have that and you see, oh, my child needs to work on. So my child, something I'm working on with her is following directions. And so the best thing that you can do as a parent or a caregiver is give simple directions, give them lots of opportunities to practice that skill within a routine. So following directions, for example, you know, I have her, we're practicing cleaning up, and we say, put it in, you know, we practice putting it in, and then we talk about putting it out, and we just play games of her constantly following directions, and we make it silly, we make it fun. Oh, where's Emmy? Where's Emmy? Oh, come out. And just adding lots of directions into everything that we do and make it fun. Like at the park today, I was giving her all kinds of directions within our game, not so much safety directions, because when they know how to follow directions within a game, they're able to translate it to safety as well. And that goes with just about anything that you need to work on. The more practice, the better. And that's what an early interventionist does. They come in and give lots of practice and then get the goal that your child needs.
That's interesting. That's so interesting. Do you all meet together, all of the different like specialists, and just kind of come up with like overall goals? Is that kind of how it is? So
this is kind of the crazy thing about early intervention, is every state is different. So in Idaho, yes, okay, that is how it was. I can speak for Idaho and I can speak for Louisiana. I'm not so familiar with other states, but every program is a little bit different. Here, they have a family service coordinator, and she does meet with the parent and they do it together. And then the providers are added later. But the providers can change the goal with the parent at any time. We have quarterly meetings, and at that time, the provider can help add a new goal, change a goal, take away a goal. And so that's kind of how it works in Louisiana. And it's done that way to help us meet the deadlines that are set by law. So we have 60 days to get a provider in, et cetera.
Okay. Does it like work very similarly to how it would in school? Like you have an IEP and all of that?
Yeah. So here it's called an IFST. So 0 to 3 are serviced through an IFST, an individual family service plan. And so the difference between an IFST and an IEP is that the goals are focused on helping the family and helping the child within their daily routines. So a goal.
Whereas an IEP would be more like the school tasks that
exactly,
they need to complete.
That they will be able to read okay, this many words by this time. It would be an IEP. An IFSP, usually a goal, trying to think of one for you. I'll use my child for an example. So Emmy will follow one step directions during playtime 3 to 4 times a day. That's just off the top of my head. But see how it has like within playtime or within a routine, it's set up within the family dynamic.
Interesting. That's cool.
So it's to aid the family. So when the goals are being discussed, what goals should be out there, we ask the family how we can help within their routines. What routine is hard? A tool that we use is called a routine-based interview. So we ask the parents about their routines and how the child is functioning within the routine. And then we use our interventions to help a child within that routine, if that makes sense. So I have a student that I'm working on that he has a hard time getting out of the door to school in the morning. There's lots of tantrums and just has a really hard time. So I created a picture schedule, and that's what my intervention session is based around, is helping him within that routine. His goals are, I think, following directions and new words. And so I embed that within the routine while I'm there.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, that's the difference there.
I'm learning so much.
I'm glad. I feel like I'm just rambling on and on. So I'm glad I'm making sense.
Yeah, no, you're making plenty of sense. And this is also stuff that you deal with every single day. So it just sounds like just normal to you. But like, this is really awesome information.
But I learn so much all of the time. There's still so much to learn, so many laws and numbers and things to memorize.
Right. Well, that I was going to move on to the next question, but this might be a little bit hard to answer because I guess it will depend a lot on the state that you're in. But so I was going to ask, like, what should a parent or teacher do when they have a concern? Like, how do they proceed?
Okay, so I did a lot of research on this today because it is different in every state. The program is called something different. It is so different, which makes it really hard for families. But I figured it out, kind of. So your first person that you could always go to is to talk to the pediatrician. So the pediatrician doesn't specialize in child development. They have so much that they learn and are so knowledgeable on. They don't always know 100%, but they're someone that is an ally that you can go to if you have concerns. But with that being said, if your mom gut is telling you that you feel like there's a concern and the pediatrician isn't concerned about it, you can still do more. You don't need a referral from a pediatrician. Anybody can refer to early intervention. Anybody. A neighbor, a sister, a mom, anybody can refer. So I would go through the pediatrician, and if that isn't right, then you can Google. And I tried a lot of different combinations today to try to get it in a lot of different states. And if you Google infant and toddler early intervention, the number pops right up. And I tried like 20, 30 states, and it comes up with that code in there. So infant and toddler early intervention. A lot of states, it is called the infant and toddler program. And in a lot of the southern states, it's called early step. So that's kind of a heads up there. But I found you can Google it and the number comes up. So once you call the number, kind of what would have happened is they will send you to a coordinator for your area, and then they will set up an evaluation. So somebody will come to your house and they will give a test to your child, but it will not look like a test. It will look like play, and you will think the person is just coming and playing with your child. But in reality, they are measuring what developmental milestones that they know and they don't know. And in order to qualify for early intervention, a child has to be low in two areas, except, this is kind of confusing, except for speech. A child can qualify just for speech or communication, but in all of the other domains, they have to qualify in two areas of development. So my child, for example, she is struggling with eating and we're having a lot of eating problems. So she's seeing a speech therapist, but she would not qualify for this early intervention program because her other domains of development are great. And so she has to go to a private speech therapist to receive that intervention, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's super helpful.
I hope so. It's confusing.
Like, do you have to be the parent to go about doing this? Like, you couldn't be like a teacher who was seeing this and calling. You need to go through the parent.
So anybody can make a referral, is what the law states, but the parent does have to be open to it because it is a family service plan. The family does participate. The caregiver does participate in my sessions. I usually will do the intervention once or twice with the child. Then I'll kind of sit back and say, okay, mom, it's your turn, and allow them to then play with their child. And sometimes I'll say, ask them this or say this, you know, and kind of coach the parent through that. And the reason for that is because the caregiver is with them 24/7. I am there 1 hour once a week until the child turns three. And so when you have a parent embedding into everything that they do, they skyrocket, they just soar. And so my main job is to coach the parent how to provide the intervention to their child.
That makes sense. That's very cool.
I can tell you, I see it every day. The parents who do the interventions with their child when I'm not there, like, their kids take off so fast. And like, I come back the next week and I'm like, what happened? Like, this is a totally different child. Like, the parents that work with them, it makes such a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. That makes a lot of sense. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what is, let's see how to begin this. I just feel lots of parents that I've worked with have been very hesitant about trying to get help. And often they're a struggle for, like, this is a kind of a struggle for teachers or them feeling like a failure, and parents feeling like a failure that they're having to get outside help. And something that I've come across a lot, this is kind of unloading a lot of different parts, so maybe we should talk about it all separately. But even when parents have reached out and they're going to have somebody come into my classroom or somebody else's classroom to watch this child, sometimes I see that the child's behavior is different that day and you wonder what happened there. But yeah, I think there's just such a stigma with this that lots of people are resistant. So I wanted to have you talk a little bit about us trying to kind of change the connotation. I'm not making any, this is not clear at all, but.
This is great. Yes, I totally get what you're saying. And yes, yes, yes. Okay. So to start, just because your child receives early intervention services does not mean your child has a disability. It does not mean that your child will struggle in school. It does not mean that you're a bad parent. It does not mean any of those things. I have a great quote that fits in really good here. So childhood is not a race to see how quickly a child can read, write, or count. Childhood is a small window of time to learn and develop at a pace which is right for each individual child. So the beauty in all of this is that children all develop at different pace. And some children need a little extra support. If your child needed extra support to learn how to drive, would you get your child that support to learn how to drive? I mean, I think you would, instead of allowing them to get in wrecks all the time, right? Like, it's the same thing. Like, you're allowing someone to come into your home that will help your child get extra practice to help them be prepared for the future. And so that's how I look at it. And it does not mean that there's anything wrong with the brain or anything. A lot of times it's just develop a little bit slower, and that's okay. They need more practice to get that. And that is totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And you're definitely not a bad parent, because I have a degree in this. I do this all the time as my job, and my child receives early intervention services. There is no, and a lot of people that I work with, their kids also receive early intervention services, because one, we see the benefit in it. We see the beauty in it, and we want that for our children. I embed into my child's day all day long. We are working on things all day long. That's how my brain works. That's what I do. That's just how I function as a mom. I'm an early interventionist and a mom. And but she still needed early intervention services even after I did everything that I know how to do. As far as a child acting differently when someone comes in to observe, that's so normal. And the observer knows that, because I've been the person that have come in and observed, and the teacher's like, no, you don't understand. This isn't typical. This is like a really good day. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. And I take the word of the teacher and of the, you know, of the parent. And sometimes we get back questionnaires, and the parent questionnaire is way different than the teacher questionnaire, because they see different things, and that all helps as well. So it's a lot of moving parts to decide if a child qualifies for services or not.
That is helpful.
And I believe firmly that a typical developing child would also benefit greatly from early intervention services. Greatly, greatly. Because it's just a lot of practice in each developmental domain. And those developmental domains prepare us to be able to read and write and count and all of these things that they have to learn how to do. If they can't get along with a peer, then they're going to have a hard time reading or sitting in a classroom and learning. And so the more practice that all of our children have, the better. And that's something that I've really struggled with as a parent, is finding quality early childhood education in my area. It is really lacking.
Yeah.
And I hope that for all children, that we can have better early intervention, better early childhood education.
Yep. That is, that's something that Spencer and I talk about a lot. It comes up a lot that it's, and definitely as a mom, it's frustrating knowing, and then the income that you receive working in early childhood does not make you able to afford the places that are good early childhood centers, you know, and it's there's a severe disconnect.
Yeah, there is. And I wouldn't even say that we have any. The options are very slim in the South, for sure. And I'm in a big city, and it's very slim picking.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was probably a little off, but yeah.
No, I think that's fair. Well, and I think that these kind of have gone together a little bit. I think that as we've started to understand that early childhood education is important and these early experiences are important, that's why we've also had this understanding of early intervention, that is important, because the early years are so vital. This is kind of new to be like, oh, we actually care where our children go. We want quality programs and we want to be able to afford them. But that's why people hear the word daycare and raise their eyebrows, because that's sometimes very accurate that yes, these daycare places can be scary. And
yeah, or sit up kids in a cage, or, you know, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, nope. It's very stressful, and especially exactly, trying to balance being a mom and a working mom. It's hard.
It is very hard. And especially when you're providing what you believe is great early childhood education to other people's children, and your child isn't getting quality early childhood education, that's really frustrating. So a few strategies, things that I think everyone should do with their child 0 to 3. First one is, a baby is never too young to talk to. A lot of times we see these infants that were just born, I'm talking a few week old, and they're like, oh, we can't talk to them, we can't anything. But yes, they are learning so much and they understand more than we think that they do. And the best thing that you can do for your child, one of the best, is talking to your child all day, every day. Tell them everything, how to make dinner. When you walk into a grocery store, say hi to the people. Tell them bye as you're leaving. Tell them what you're going to get on your store list, etc. So that's the first thing that I think really aids development. The second one is reading to your child. I have really been working on this with a lot of the parents that I work with. And reading makes such a big difference because a child hears so many more words from being read to than just hearing normal everyday talk, because we use a different type of English in a book compared to how we talk. And so that is also really, really beneficial. Allow your child to turn the pages, point to things, have them look at you, make eye contact, go back. A third thing is eye contact. So a great way to get your child to make eye contact if they're struggling with is running a toy that they really like across your face as you're playing with it. So a car, boom, across, or a ball, you can play rolling the ball on the floor and then bring it to your face and back down. You can do this with a baby by shaking a rattle by your face and then bringing it to the side and have them kind of follow the rattle and make that eye contact. But those are the top three things that I would say is super important to aid development for all children, not just a child that needs extra support.
Well, and I imagine all of those are useful ways to also kind of be screening your child and understanding where they are if you're not talking to them and not looking at them face to face. It's hard to tell even if they are having a difficulty with hearing or if they're not making the sounds that they should be making at that point, or if they're not making eye contact, which is a big indicator. You know, these are good ways for parents and teachers to be very aware of where the child is at. I love the your comment about the grocery store, though. For some reason, this has always stuck in my mind, and I don't even remember. It must have been like some Speech Association of America or something. I don't know even if that is a thing, but I'm sure it is. But there was a commercial that I watched when I was like younger, like way younger, but it stuck with me forever. And it's this lady at a grocery store, and you're just seeing her, and she's just like doing ridiculous things at a grocery store and like talking to the broccoli and singing songs as she's going along. And you're like, oh, this lady is a little crazy. And then it backs up and there's a baby in her cart and she's interacting with the baby. And that has stuck with me. It's like up until being a mom, I think about that all the time. And I'm like, oh, forget the other people around you. It does make you feel stupid at the beginning, but just don't worry about it and just talk and talk and talk.
Yes, I am that crazy lady in the grocery store. I can guarantee you I am the crazy one. And my child loves to go grocery shopping. I can't pass the store in the car without her screaming, store, store, store. She loves it. And at this point, she knows what we normally get and like the order we normally get it. She'll say apples, bananas, milk, eggs, cheese. Like she knows around the store the way that we usually go and the order we get them. And we can't get anything out of order either.
I love that.
Yes. Yeah, so they learn so much from that. I mean, just learning order and being able to tell back in order, the literacy skills there. I mean, so many things.
Yeah. Well, and I like the idea of doing, you know, everything you do is doing it in context. And I love that in general, because like, these are the skills that we really need to know. I like, that was so scary leaving home for the first time, or even just like going to the store myself the first time and having my own money and being like, I don't know how to do this. Like, I have never done this before. But just to be able to have those general life skills, I think we're, you know, there's a lot of memes going around the internet about like, why don't we teach how to do taxes instead of about, you know, the powerhouse of the cell, you know, but understanding that real life, that's how we spend the most of our time.
Yes.
So,
and what better person to teach that than a mom or, you know, the primary caregiver, those primary responsibilities of life. Yes.
So cool. I did want to ask, like, what are some of the benefits of having a neurodivergent child in your class or in your home? Because, you know, you talked about how just because they're having early intervention doesn't necessarily mean that they have a disability. But I think even, you know, these children who do have disabilities, while that is hard, and those parents who are living with that, that is, I can't even imagine. I'm sure that is really, really, really hard. But it's also a wonderful thing. And I love having those students in my classroom.
Yes. So I have taught some, and so I have some experiences from that. And I also see it in the home all of the time. I see it in the home. First, I want to talk about neurodivergent and what that means. So neurodivergent is a very new term. And so it means that, I'm going to go straight from the definition so I don't mess anything up. So it means that a child or person functions differently than what is considered typical. So that's what neurodivergent means. And that is a term that is being used in the field now. And every family views what they want to call it differently. And so what I do as a professional and even in my life is I refer to the disability as the parent does. So if the parent says that my child has autism spectrum disorder, then that's how I talk about it. Or I say autism if that's how the parent talks about it, or disability if that's how the parent talks about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the best rule of thumb I've found, is to follow whatever the parent says. And if the parent doesn't say anything about it, then I don't typically point that out, because every child has weaknesses and strengths, whether there's a diagnosis or not. So the very, very first thing that comes to my mind is when I was teaching second grade, I had the sweetest, sweetest child in my classroom who had spina bifida. And it was my first experience ever with a child with spina bifida. And he made such an impact on my life and to all the children in that classroom. He is the kindest, just most respectful child that I have ever met. If he was asked to do something, he did it at a drop of a hat, whether his friends wanted to do it or not, and often was a leader in the classroom. He did use a wheelchair to get around, but that did not stop him at all. He often talked about how his family took him snowboarding. And that's what his short stories were always about, that he had to write about in English class, was how he went snowboarding and he played basketball in a normal rec league in town. And there was one day that it was snowing on the playground and there was tons of ice. And I looked at him and I said, are you sure you want to go out today? And he was like, yes, of course I'm going to go out, Ms. Barrick. And I was like, okay, you can stay in if you would like, and, you know, play a learning game on the computer. And he's like, no, I'm going out. And I look out the window and he is throwing the football in his wheelchair and just having the best time, not worried about the ice, not worried about any of it. And he was just a leader in the classroom. And he did not let his disability hold him back. And I really believe that it was his parents supported that and taught him that his disability didn't define him. But in the home, I see it all the time where older siblings will tell me, oh no, you have to do this to help so-and-so. Like they know how to help their younger siblings, or even if the child I'm seeing is the oldest sibling and there's a child kind of close to age, a little younger, the younger sibling will step in and be like, oh, Miss Lauren, this is how you do it, you know, or whatever. They watch out for each other, and it just builds empathy in it within a family. And it's really a beautiful thing to watch.
I love that. Yeah. And I think we're having a problem in our society, our country, and everything right now, that there's kind of a lack of empathy. So I was also even thinking, because even my co-host Spencer, she has ADHD, and it just adds so much more variety, just like the way that she thinks about things differently, or when she gets distracted and it kind of brings us on a tangent that we wouldn't have talked about. Just variety is important, especially in learning environments, because you learn more from what is different than what is the same, you know?
Right. And I'm a big believer that we learn a lot more in school than just reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one thing, important thing that we learn in school is how they get along with others. And children with disabilities or neurodivergent, whatever way you want to call it, they give us the opportunity to really learn how to love and appreciate someone that thinks or does things a little bit differently than that.
Yeah, I agree. I love that.
Another resource I wanted to point out, a screener that we use to evaluate children is called the Ages and Stages Questionnaire. And their company put out these beautiful handouts for each age group, activities that you can do with your child to help aid development. And this is for any child, typical developing or a child that needs extra assistance. And so, yeah, I'll get those to you, Lucy, because they are a PDF.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. And we can share those. That sounds awesome. Yeah. Okay. How can people find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram, and I don't even know if I know what my Instagram handle is.
I can pull it up.
I need to share more child development stuff. I'm really not that good at it. But if you send me a message with any question at all, I will be happy to answer it. So it's Lauren, LAUREN, _ Barrick, BARRICK. And like I said, feel free to send me a message with any questions. If you're interested in going into this field, let me know. I'd be happy to answer your questions and point you in the right direction.
And you guys also have a YouTube channel, right?
Yes, we do have a YouTube channel. Here comes the YouTube master right here. Yes, we have not been the best at posting on it regularly, but we do. It's called Two Steps to Somewhere. So if you want to check out more about our family, my husband would love it. I get very embarrassed by it, but yeah, he loves to post on there. So he loves when we get more views. He'll come in and be like, we got 2 more views today. So there you go.
Yeah. Awesome. We'll link that.
Okay.
All right.
I would love to leave with a quote. So a quote that has impacted me since school, a professor that I had, I think she was lecturing and she said this quote, and I was like, this is brilliant. She said that if we give a child what they need now, then they will have what they need in the future. And I found that so, so true. We always think about, oh, when they're in kindergarten, they're going to need to know this and that. But if we teach a child to follow directions and be able to talk and communicate their wants and needs, then they will be able to do those things once they reach school age. So that's something that I've always tried to model my career on, is giving a child what they need right now and not what they need in the future.
Thank you so much for listening to The Speckled Bees, A Celebration of Childhood. Please follow us and subscribe and share to your friends, and we'll talk to you next week.